Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Stefan Black. Welcome, Stefan, to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Stefan is an associate with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, and he has a specific expertise in litigation and employment law. We're going to talk a little bit about some employment law issues today. His practice focuses on civil litigation, commercial litigation, and employment disputes. And he moved here from Texas. You're from Houston originally, right?
Correct.
And, well, we won't ask you what brought you here, but I'm glad that you're here today with our firm and able to tell us a little bit about some of your expertise. Stefan received his undergraduate degree in English and political science from James Madison and is a graduate magna cum laude from George Mason University School of Law. And he served as a member of the Civil Rights Law Journal, and he's a writing fellow and a research assistant, was a research assistant to Professor Craig Lerner. Following law school, he clerked for the Honorable Arthur Virig and the Honorable Bruce White of the Fairfax County Circuit Court, where he acquired a ton of expertise in litigating the issues that we're going to be talking about today, and that is non-compete agreements, non-compete covenants in Virginia. What is a non-compete covenant?
A non-compete covenant is a contract between a business and its employees that prohibits the employees from competing against that business once the employment relationship is ended. And in fact, non-competes are one of the few provisions in a contract that a Virginia court will hold to be unenforceable as a matter of public policy. And the reason for that is that a non-compete limits the employee's ability to work for a competitor after the employment relationship is ended. And as a result, they're seen as disfavored restraints on trade.
Interesting. So has the law changed a lot in the recent years in non-competes?
Absolutely. Unlike many areas of the law with regard to non-competes is very new. Most laws go back hundreds of years in the United States, but the law with regard to non-competes is only 25 to 30 years old.
I see.
So Virginia courts are still working out the kinks in determining which covenants they're going to enforce and which covenants they're not. And recently, most courts have been applying increasing scrutiny to non-competes and are more likely to rule them to be unenforceable than they were previously. So covenants that were enforceable just 5 years ago are no longer enforceable.
Now, that's true in Virginia particularly, right?
Absolutely.
So the Virginia courts don't like non-competes.
Don't like them at all. Absolutely.
But there are other jurisdictions in which people enter into contracts, like Maryland and D.C. and Delaware and New York. Is it the same in every state?
No, it varies state by state. And different states apply different levels of scrutiny to non-competes. For example, Delaware is very forgiving, and even if it's unenforceable as written, they will go out of their way to find another way of rewriting the contract or interpreting it very narrowly such that it is enforceable.
So they might do something called blue penciling.
Absolutely.
To the non-compete agreement, and they might rewrite it.
Absolutely.
Wow. But has blue penciling or rewriting non-competes been adopted in Virginia? Is that something that we've seen?
The Virginia Supreme Court, to the best of my knowledge, has not actually explicitly ruled on that issue, but virtually every single circuit court, trial court that's addressed the issue has held that Virginia courts will not blue pencil non-compete agreements.
Interesting. So you said that non-competes often get struck down. What are some of the common reasons that non-compete agreements might be struck down by the circuit court or a higher court in Virginia?
The most common reason is that they're subject to what's called the janitor's defense.
The janitor's defense.
And what that means is that in order to be enforceable, a non-compete must very narrowly describe what an employee can and cannot do for a competitor. So if the non-compete prohibits the employee from working in any capacity or in any manner for a competitor, then if you read that literally, the provision would be could be applied so broadly as to prohibit the employee from even working as a janitor for the competitor.
But should every employee be viewed as going to work as a janitor? I mean, let's say I'm a sales guy.
Exactly. And that's what's kind of hard about when you're writing non-competes is even if you're a sales guy, even if you're the CEO, if you've got a non-compete, then courts will come up with hypotheticals such as working as a janitor or a copier or a clerk and say that if you can't, because there's no legitimate business interest in prohibiting the person from working in those capacities, if the non-compete on its face prohibits an employee from working in any capacity for a competitor, it's overly broad and will not be enforced in most cases.
When would it then be enforceable? Under what circumstances can a non-compete be enforceable?
Well, what you need to do is you need to narrowly define the scope of what the employee can and cannot do. And a very successful way of drafting that is to say that they cannot perform services that are the same as or substantially similar to the services they provide to the former employer. That way, you're ensuring that the employee is only prohibited from providing competitive services, and that the court will enforce.
So if I'm a sales guy, let's say, we'll use that example again, and I'm performing sales for a government contractor in Northern Virginia, I'm going out and trying to do business development work, and I say, and the employer says, and it's non-compete, that you will not engage in sales activity, do business development for any other government contractor in Northern Virginia, let's say. Is that something that would be enforceable or not enforceable?
You know, it's a pretty close call. You're going to look at a lot of factors. I mean, when you're talking about sales activities, that's, my guess is some courts would probably say that that's a little vague. What does it mean what is a sales activity?
Sure.
If you're the guy who's filling the envelopes, it's sending out the direct mailing, is that sales activities?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, does it an employer really have a competitive business in prohibiting somebody from working as the guy who's stuffing the mail envelopes? And my guess is probably not.
But let me play devil's advocate with you. Let's say I've always earned my living for the last 30 years as a guy that goes out and does business development for government contractors. And I've always lived and worked in Northern Virginia. And now the employer is coming to me and saying, you cannot, for 2 years after you retire from employment or you leave our employment for any reason, engage in sales activity for a government contractor in Northern Virginia. Is that something that I would feel comfortable as an employer having my employee sign? And is it something that as an employee I would feel comfortable signing for the employer?
Well, one of the problems with non-competes is that there's so much uncertainty as to what is going to be enforced and what isn't.
Sure.
And that puts employers in a precarious provisions of not knowing whether or not their contract is going to be enforced. And it puts employees in a precarious position once their employment relationship is terminated of what can I do? Mm-hmm. Who can I work for? Who can I solicit for employment? And because of the uncertainty that's out there as a result in the law, you know, nobody really knows where they stand.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that the janitor's defense is one way in which non-competes are thrown out of court. What's another way?
A lot of times, non-competes define what is a competitor too broadly.
Okay.
And there's a very famous case that says that involved a company that sold a special kind of brushless motor. And it enforced or imposed a non-compete on its salesman that said you can't work for any company that sells motors.
Any kind of motor.
Any kind of motor.
I see.
And the court said because you define competitor to include not only the companies that sell this kind of specialized brushless motors, but any motors,
mm-hmm.
then you define competitor too broadly, and the non-compete provision was unenforceable as a matter of law. So when you're drafting your non-compete, you need to define what is your business very carefully and very narrowly. So if you, let's say, you work as a doctor's and you're an ear, nose, and throat doctor,
okay,
you can't have a non-compete that says prohibits your employees from working in providing medical services in the Northern Virginia area because you don't provide all medical services. You only provide a narrow category of medical services, and that needs to define how you define competitor.
So if you narrowed it to say ear, nose, and throat, and you were an ear, nose, and throat surgeon or an ear, nose, and throat practitioner, then the non-compete might possibly be enforceable against you.
Absolutely. You sidestep that defense and the courts will have to analyze the other factors, but absolutely.
What's another way in which we can throw out a non-compete?
The duration.
Okay.
Every single non-compete has to be of a limited period of time, so you can't indefinitely prohibit your employees from competing against you. Now, this is one of the ways where the law really has evolved recently. Years ago, a non-compete that lasted 3, 4, 5 years were commonly enforced. But more recently, we're seeing that anything over 2 years is raising the eyebrows of trial courts. So when you're drafting your non-competes, it's got to be 2 years or less, and preferably 12 months.
You know, I've seen situations where I've had clients sell their businesses, and the buyer has tried to impose a five-year non-compete on the seller because they're getting a lot of money and they don't want them to come back into the space and interfere with them. That's a long period of time. Is that something in Virginia, because they're selling their business, it might be given a different standard or different credence than if I were just an employee?
Absolutely. Non-competes that are executed in the sale of a in the context of a sale of business, mm-hmm. or other contexts where the parties are on equal playing ground, such as a partnership or an agreement or an operating agreement within an LLC, mm-hmm. are granted substantially more deference than a non-compete that's executed in an employment context. And the rationale is that when an employee is applying for employment with the company, he has no bargaining power.
Right.
And therefore, and you know, the employer is seen as, he can just push down whatever kind of terms of the contract he wants on the employee, and the employee is really has no choice but to accept. But in the sale of business context, the parties are on equal, have equal bargaining power. And so therefore, the courts will say, if you agreed to this non-compete, we're going to hold you to it. Now, that doesn't mean that they're always going to be enforced, but a five-year duration in a sale of business context is much more likely to be accepted than a five-year non-compete duration in an employment context.
What if I sold my business for a dollar and they assumed some debt for me because I just had to get out of it right away, and then I have to go work in the same field? So I didn't get really any consideration for the sale of my business. That's one of the issues that's come up in a recent case that we've been dealing with. Is that going to be given the same deference? I mean, a five-year non-compete for getting nothing for the business? That doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't seem fair. I think that courts would still have an issue with your contention that there's no consideration, because by assuming the debt, you really are being helped out and substantially. And I think that's going to...
Depends on how much the debt is, I guess.
Correct. Exactly.
And there are other ways to throw out non-competes, aren't there?
Absolutely. One of the ways that people are running into problems are they're defining the geographic scope too broadly.
Okay.
And the key is the geographic scope of the non-compete must correspond to where the person, where the employer does business, or where the customers are coming from. And this must be described very specifically. For example, if you only do work in Fairfax County, you can't have a non-compete that prohibits the person from working anywhere in Virginia. Mm-hmm. That's just not going to be enforceable. You have to really limit it to the specific area in which you do business.
What if I'm an internet company?
That's one of the new and hot topics in the area. And there haven't been too many cases that have addressed this. There's only one, to my knowledge, Virginia case that's addressed the issue. But in general, nationwide or worldwide non-competes are enforceable with regard to internet companies, so long as the other restrictions, the time, the functional limitation, the definition of competitor, are very narrowly limited. For example, with an internet company, I would recommend no more than a year, preferably 6 months of a duration.
Wow.
Because it's just, because of the worldwide, because of the breadth of the geographic scope, everything else has to be much, much more limited if you want to enforce the provision at all.
Now, there are other kinds of non-competes that we refer to as other terms, like non-solicitation provisions. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Non-solicitation provisions are an increasingly popular alternative to non-competes. And because non-competes are very difficult to enforce, people resorted to non-solicitations. And what those provisions do is they prohibit you from soliciting certain customers of your former employer. So you can work for a competitor, you can open up your own shop right down the road, but what you can't do is you can't solicit business from the customers of your former employer.
Mm-hmm.
And courts have granted much greater deference to these kind of provisions because they're seen to have struck an appropriate balance between the employer's ability to
maintain its business, yeah.
Exactly, and the employee's ability to earn a living after one employment relationship ends.
Which makes sense.
It does. It's very rare that these non-solicitation provisions are struck down. However, one thing that we need to keep in mind is that some courts are saying that the non-solicitation provision must only apply to customers with whom the employee has a substantial business relationship with, and not all customers of the business.
Substantial business relationship. Okay.
Right. How's that for vague?
Yeah. What's substantial? What's a business relationship? What kind of relationship? Well, we're coming near the end of our time today, but this has been fascinating, and there are lots of other things that we can talk about in the future about non-competes, not only in Virginia, but elsewhere. And I want to thank you, Stephen Black, for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, my direct phone number is 703-218-2176. I'm also a regular contributor to the law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman's labor and employment blog, which is called The Labor and Employment Cocktail. You can find us online. So thank you very much, Wayne, for having me.
Thanks for being a special guest. We'll have you back on again. This is a great topic. And thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Join me next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.